You are the salt of the earth. But if salt has lost its taste, how can its saltiness be restored? It is no longer good for anything, but is thrown out and trampled underfoot. You are the light of the world. A city built on a hill cannot be hid. No one, after lighting a lamp, puts it under the bushel basket, but on the lampstand, and it gives light to all in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others, so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father in heaven. The word of God for the people of God.
I invite you to take out the sermon outline for the message this morning, and hopefully that will be of use to you. As I often say, the most important words you would write down are the words God would speak to your mind and your heart as you listen this morning, more important than anything I say. And I do hope that you're going to have some things to write down, as you'll hear later in the message, that I believe will make a great difference that God will be able to use this week. I like the story David Jeremiah tells about the early days of Thomas Road Baptist Church in Lynchburg, Virginia. They were sort of a pioneer congregation in bus ministry back in the time when that was very popular. They would send buses all over the city of Lynchburg on Sunday afternoons to pick up kids for their Sunday night service. As they called it, that was their evangelistic service. And they would bring hundreds of kids to the church. But over time, they began to observe an unfortunate trend that was happening. Some of the kids, rather than getting off the bus and marching right into the sanctuary, were turning a corner and heading downtown to Lynchburg to go play in the arcades. They were sort of getting a free ride downtown, and they knew about how long the service would last, and so they would return when the buses would leave, so they were getting free transportation. Well, the church leaders met. What do we do about this problem? And they came up with a solution. They started posting ushers outside the building. So when they saw wayward teens heading downtown, they would gently grab them and guide them back inside the church. So one night, these ushers observed two young fellas clearly intending to head downtown. They got no more than a few steps away from the church building when they felt these heavy hands on their shoulders grab them, turn them around, march them inside right down front to the front row where you graduates unfortunately have to sit this morning. And the sermon that night was really moving. And at the end of the service, when an invitation was given to devote your life to Christ, these two boys came forward. After the service, volunteers took them off to a prayer room, prayed with them, talked with them about the significance of their decision and the next steps that they could take in this new faith of theirs. Then they explained, now boys, the buses have already left, but it's okay, we'll make sure that you get rides home. The boys said, what buses? They said, well, the buses that you rode to the church on. Boy said, we don't know anything about any buses. We were just walking down the street outside when these two guys grabbed us, brought us inside. You know, there's never a mistake when it comes to God's work, purpose, and activity. Never a mistake. In fact, the aim in life is to see how much of the time we can get in God's way. Now, there are a lot of ways to get in God's way, aren't there? There are times when you purposely are an obstacle to what God is trying to do, or when you don't want to hear a message that God is sending and you just sort of stop up your ears. But there's another way, a good way. When you think about what is the activity God wants to be about in our world, and you seek to align yourself with that, when we do our part so that God can do God's part. One time, Jesus used an illustration to help his disciples understand what their part in life is. And he picked two very ordinary, common symbols, salt and light. In the Gospel of John, Jesus uses a lot of symbols to talk about himself, his identity. They begin with the words, I am. I am the bread of life. I am the true vine. I am the good shepherd. Those are symbols in which Jesus helps his followers understand who he is. But twice in the Gospel of Matthew, Jesus says, you are. And he uses symbols to help his followers understand what their role in life is, what their purpose is. You are the salt of the earth, he says. Then, as now, salt has lots of properties, but properties that became important symbols for the people of faith. In fact, you'll see in your outline a list of these properties, and besides some of them are scriptures to show how salt was used as an important symbol. For instance, sacrifice. Salt is put on the sacrifices, as it talks about in the book of Leviticus. That's because salt is an enduring substance. It doesn't go bad, it doesn't rot. Put salt on the offerings as a way of saying that this represents our gift to God, something that doesn't go bad. It's an enduring quality of life, and therefore, it also represents the covenant relationship between God and people. That covenant of God is a steadfast, enduring covenant. God isn't fickle in the way God feels about us. It's permanent, like salt. Salt also represents purification. If you cut yourself and you pour salt on it, it's not going to feel good. But that is because salt is a purifying agent. It has healing property to it. So in the Bible, it talks about salt as a purifying substance, representing our need to be purified before God. Salt also represents fellowship. It became a symbol of people's relationship with each other, often symbolized in a meal together. So the words used to describe a fellowship meal were sharing salt. And then, of course, salt represents seasoning. And then last of all, salt is a preservative. In a time when you did not have refrigeration, salt was a critical substance to allow meats to last. And this is probably why salt became such a valuable product in Jesus' day. In fact, Roman soldiers were often paid in salt. It was like a currency. So today, when you hear somebody say, that person is worth her salt, well, they're not just saying that she has a lot of sodium in her. It goes back to that time when salt was a precious commodity, something that was very valuable. Now, what some preachers do with this verse of Jesus, you're the salt of the earth, is they take all of these properties and then stretch them out and help us think about how each one is a symbol for discipleship. And there's value in that. But I think Jesus' point was really a lot simpler. You see, all of these properties have something in common. They remind us that salt exists to enhance something else. All of these properties are symbols of the fact that salt exists to enhance other things. When salt exists for itself, not only does it not enhance, it does just the opposite. Some years ago, We had homemade ice cream. And you know, to make homemade ice cream, you have to have rock salt and pour it on the ice. And that's what creates the freezing condition. Which personally, I might just say, those of you who are going to be studying sciences, maybe you can explain this one to me. I don't get it, because in the wintertime, don't we use salt to melt ice? And here it helps create freezing conditions. I don't understand it, I just know it works. So I put lots of rock salt on the ice. We had great homemade ice cream. Later that night, it was dark. Susan said, go empty out the bucket of water. So I took the bucket off the edge of the patio, but it's dark. I really can't see what's off the edge of the patio, so I dumped the bucket out. And a few days later, Susan said, can somebody tell me what happened to my flowers? They were growing so well, and then a few days ago, they died. I said, that is awful. I don't have any idea. What could have happened? When salt sits, it kills. Jesus said, "You are the salt of the earth." What's his point? That meaning and purpose and value in life will be found when we understand that our existence is to enhance others. I put a quote, graduates, in the outline today just for you. Albert Schweitzer, look at this quote. "I don't know what your destiny in life will be, but one thing I know. The only ones among you who will be really happy are those who will have sought and found how to serve." We just heard a long list of the things that you are going to be studying. I can only imagine the careers that you're going to go into, the things that you're going to do in your lives that are going to be powerful and amazing. But they will be most amazing when you let them be for others' good, and you'll find value in your life in that process. You're the salt of the earth. And then Jesus said something that builds on this notion: you're the light of the world. Now, what's interesting about this one is this is the one symbol Jesus uses for himself and us. How can we be the light of the world if Jesus says, "I am the light of the world"? Well, of course, what do we use light for? It's to help see better, right? Especially in a dark place. If you go down in the basement and you flash a flashlight, it's so that you can see what you're looking for. Now think about that for just a minute. If you're in a dark place and you turn on a light, what is it that you look at? The light or where the light is pointing? If you're in a dark place and you stare at the light, it doesn't help you see. In fact, it blinds you. But when you point the light away at the place where the light's directed, that's when you can see. It just reminds us of a simple truth about light. Light travels away from its source. Light travels away from its source. So Jesus is the source. Jesus is the light of the world. But Jesus shines light into the world, into people's darkness, into places of hurt, into places of forgottenness through other people. We become the light. But in order to be effective at being the light of Christ, we can't be pointing back to ourselves. It's always about being directed toward the places that will help other people see and be enlightened and be helped. A great question to regularly ask in life is anything in my life impacting God's ability to shine the light of Christ through me? Is anything dimming that light in my life right now? An attitude? A behavior? An ego? A need to have light turned back on me so that I get attention out of what I'm doing? Or am I content to say, "God, whatever you can use about my life, with my education, with my experiences, with everything that you've given me, if you can use that about my life to shine light to other people," that is when we will discover value. That's when we discover meaning in life. You know, it's been said that with all of the statues that exist in the world to honor people, statues of great leaders and heroes of different kind, the only statues that have been voluntarily built, not the statues that governments built or that people ordered, the ones that people voluntarily built to honor another person were for people who lived for others. See, we get our sense of recognition and meaning when we live for others. Graduates, what does success mean to you? That's really an important question to ask. What is my definition of success? It'll probably change as you go through life, but it's important to regularly ask yourselves that. What is my definition for success? And it's easy to let that definition get attached to specific things like getting to a certain position, having certain things, whatever it might be that can be like a worldly measurement. The caution I would issue is, I know a lot of people who reached all of their definitions of success, and they became very unhappy and miserable because their success was about them. But when success becomes other people, well, a couple of years ago, I got to know Sam Hornish Jr., who won the 2006 Indy 500. And he's a really great guy. He's a United Methodist, by the way, takes his faith very seriously. And when we were getting to know each other, talking about his racing trophies and everything that he ever accomplished, the whole time we're talking, his three children were like climbing all over him like a jungle gym, just constantly. And he's not looking at this as a distraction. He's playing with the kids, setting them down, talking to me. Kids are climbing back on him. And he said words I'll never forget. He said, "You know, Rob, here's what I found. Trophies tarnish. Trophies tarnish. The most important success for me in my life will be that my kids think I'm a winner." Well, that's not something you can just put on the shelf, is it? But that's something that gives you a lasting sense of value and success. Salt and light, letting God use us to be of benefit to others. So I want us to think, before we close the message this morning, how we at St. Luke's can be salt and light for people in our community just by being inviters and bringers. We have worked for a schedule of events this summer that will give all of us easy opportunity to invite people to come to some kind of event at St. Luke's and experience what God might use to bring light and hope to people. Outside the doors of the sanctuary this morning, there is a table set up just out here with all kinds of material like I have here today that we want you to use to give to other people. Now, the first items here, it's kind of a funny little deal for this Thursday night, the Hoosier 100 race. We have vouchers that you can pick up this morning to go to the race because we're having a St. Luke's night at the race at the fairgrounds. And I'm going to give the invocation and ride in the pace car. And then kids in St. Luke's are going to shout out the start your engines. And so we just want to have a fun night, but you can pick up vouchers for $10 off tickets that you'll buy at the gate, or you can buy your ticket today for half off. For $15, you can get your ticket to the race. But think about some people you could bring with you just to experience the fun and fellowship of St. Luke's and maybe see me wreck the pace car or something like that. And then, this is an advertisement of our upcoming June worship series called Teology, Spiritual Lessons from the Game of Golf. You even have a little St. Luke's golf tee that's in here. Now, here's what I'd like you to do. I would like you to think of somebody you know right now who loves golf, but they might not be active in a church. Somebody who loves golf, but they might not be active in a church. Pick up a card this morning to take to that person and say, "I'd love for you to join us for this worship series in June. We're gonna have a great time. We're gonna talk about the need for mulligans and life is playing it where it lies sometimes. We're gonna have a fun series. Pick up these cards." And then June the 24th, the Sandy Patty concert. What a great opportunity to invite people to experience amazing music and choir. I heard we've got like some 40 people who've signed up to sing in the choir who are not a part of the choir all the time. So it's like this place is going to be sold out up here for that concert. It's going to be an amazing night. So pick up the advertisements for the Sandy Patty concert. And then, for young adults, we have two different things. An advertisement about events this summer for college-age students. Do you have any college students who come home and feel like, you know, the church doesn't have anything for my age? Well, here's an advertisement of events that are taking place. And events for those who are a little older than college age in their 20s and 30s, young adult events. So we hope you'll pick up one of these. And then we've got activities, advertising our summer service opportunities, as well as all of our kids' camps and the ways you can invite young families. And then last of all, an advertisement for the Global Leadership Summit. And I'm not a betting person, but I would wager that if you've never been to the GLS, August 10 and 11, if you come, it's going to be the best thing you've experienced this year. It's that good. The best thing you've experienced. And if you invite people from your workplace or your neighborhood, you will be very proud that you brought them to such a high caliber, high quality event. We are very honored to be hosting, again, August 10 and 11. Who are people God would use you to invite? Even for things like the service opportunities. Invite them to come and serve. Maybe they've never been here before, but say, hey, I'd like for you to serve and be a part of helping other people. Let me close with a funny story about that. Last month, the United Methodist Church of the Resurrection in Kansas City hosted the Leading Edge for senior pastors and executive directors of our largest Methodist churches in the country. So Susan and I went, Dave Williamson and Nancy Lane. And the first night, we got to the church, went in the door, and this greeter from the church welcomed us and gave us directions where to find our places. And then she looked at me and said, are you Rob Fuquay? I said, well, I am. How do you know that? She said, well, I've been in the small group and we just read your book, The God You Can Know. I can't believe I get a chance to meet you here. Now, forgive the vanity, but this doesn't happen to me every day. So I'm kind of enjoying this moment. She says, I've got to run home and get my book so that you can sign it tonight. Susan and Dave and Nancy are back there rolling their eyes like, oh my goodness. Well, after the event, we needed to get back to our hotel, but the shuttle that brought us was not returning to the hotel. So we're kind of scrambling to find somebody who might give us a lift and who has room for four people in their vehicle. Well, nobody does. But we see this woman again. She said, you know what? I'm cleaning up things here from the church, putting them in the back of my car. I've got a really big car. I live just past the hotel where you're going. Let me give you a ride. So we get in the car, and it's just about driving Susan, Nancy, and Dave crazy because she's quoting my book back to me. And she's remembering where I talk about the meaning of names. And she says, and your name, I remember it means famous person. I get to have a famous person in my car. Well, that just about does the rest of them. They're like throwing up in the back seat listening to this. I said, all right, enough about me. What did you think of my lady? No, I didn't do that. I said, how did you get involved in this church? How did you come to Church of the Resurrection? She goes, well, it's a funny story. I was going through a really bad time in my life, a real painful transition, and I had just moved to the house where I live now. And I'd not been to the church, but I got a phone call one day from somebody at the church. As it turns out, a person at the church was trying to line up volunteers to serve at an event that they were hosting. And this person got a list of names, and somebody had mistakenly given her name. They didn't mean to. They were just in a hurry and gave the name of this person they knew with a phone number. She'd never been to the church. So they called and said, we're calling from Church of the Resurrection. Could you help volunteer for an event coming up this week? She's never been to this church. But she thinks, maybe God's telling me something. Okay, I'll come volunteer. So she shows up and serves, just like she's a regular member. And then she starts coming to worship. And then she gets connected to a small group. And then she starts serving in other ways. And she said, this church has changed my life. This church has given me such hope and encouragement. I love my church. No, I don't believe there are accidents with God. I believe that's what you call getting in God's way, when you're simply willing to pick up a phone and call someone, or put a flyer in a mailbox, or say to a colleague who sits next to you every day, "Hey, you like golf, don't you? Hey, you would love a leadership development event, wouldn't you?" You never know what God might do when we do our part.